the world tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Well, our national divorce picture today is an absolute disgrace. On a recent World Tomorrow program on television, and also as we're daily on radio, I was reading some of the divorce statistics, especially for the Los Angeles area, where it's now getting to be about every other one, and even more. 7 out of 10, I think, in the South Bay area of the San Francisco part of California. But what is it that occurs in such a short period of time in our modern Western world of affluence, where we have so much of the entertainment that tells us all about love, to lead two people from the pinnacle of such tender feelings, of all the romance and the sharing of things together, the dating, the laughter, the fun, the proposal, the planning for marriage, even maybe the establishment of a home, and oftentimes the rearing of children? Now, you look at it all they've been through, the thick and thin together, as you say, unhappiness, disease, maybe the loss of a child, but take all of the marital experiences, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, or increasingly 15 years these people have been together. What is it that in our American way of life leads thousands of these people to the divorce courts? Why is it that our homes and marriages are falling apart by leaps and bounds today? What is it that makes these people who promise to stick together through everything, and they promise to love one another for all eternity, they were really going to have a dizzying romance, and in just a few years, here they are hating one another. They're charging this or that kind of cruelty. He doesn't love me anymore. She's out with a neighbor's husband, etc. What on earth is going on in the marriages in the United States today? Now, to give you a brief look at the divorce picture again, some of the stats that I gave last time, they haven't changed very much. It's every 1.5 minutes that there is an American divorce. Every year, over 1,800,000 eager, hopeful young couples get married and go out to establish a home together, and ultimately 1 in 4 of that mammoth group are going to get divorced. In the Los Angeles, Hollywood area, as I said, it's 1 in 2. We in the United States are leading the world in divorce. 30% of the world's divorces are granted in the United States, although, remember, we only contain 6% of the population of the world. But we have 30% of all divorces. More than 6 million Americans now divorced or separated. As I said, it's every 1.5 minutes. That's 1,000 decrees granted every day, and every day 3,000 people in the United States arrive at the conclusion they're going to dissolve their marriage. A lot of them don't do it, but this brings us to the next point, that for every actual divorce, there are many other homes that are sort of, you might say, armed truces, where the couples are going their own way. It's a de facto marriage. They're living in the same home, but it's nothing more than a sort of a glorified hotel or motel room. And for the sake of the kiddies, or the sake of the financial investments, or the sake of what their friends think, or their politics, or you name it, they are at least temporarily sticking it out, but very unhappily so. And so, increasingly, we look at what has been called the Hollywood marriage go-round, where divorce is held up as quite the thing to do. You hear a lot of copy today in some of the talk programs about maybe dissolving marriage and not even having marriage as an institution in the Western world, of doing away with it entirely. And some people are in favor of this. Others are in favor of trial marriages and the like. But the point is, it's not bringing us very much happiness. And you don't know very many happy homes. And you don't know very many of what might be called fulfilled, warm, comfortable, happy marriages. You just do not. You might know of a few, and that's good if you do, but there are precious few of them. And the question is, why? What is happening to us? What's happening to our marriages today? Why is it that people who a short few months or years ago said they loved one another no longer love one another? Is it because they weren't in love in the first place? Now, in the words of divorce lawyers and marriage counselors and people who deal with it continually, people to whom this is a veritable way of life, they're constantly every single day going to their offices and sitting down and talking over the intimate problems of people who come to them in a last-ditch attempt. And granted, this is quite rare, because most people would be too embarrassed to go to a marriage counselor in the first place. But in this last-ditch attempt to save a marriage, at least to protect the children. And these same marriage counselors are saying that the thing wrong with American marriage is American courtship. And American courtship is a wild search for an experience of what we like to call love. Now, I said at the beginning of this program that it's impossible for you to fall in love, and I'm going to substantiate that and prove it to you. And it's simply coming to a definition of what is love in the first place. Now, you've heard a lot about love. Love has been the subject of poetry, of literature, of novels, of motion pictures, of television series, and it's such part and parcel with our Western way of life that we hear about it. You hear about the song titles like Love Makes the World Go Round. Now, it doesn't either, but that's what we say. And they say that it's wonderful falling in love. All of the things that you hear about love. In the Bambi movie years ago, it was said that when someone fell in love, he became Twitter-pated. And this made your eyes cross. It made your stomach do flip-flops. It gave your liver a jolt. It did something to your heart and your lungs. You sort of lit up and said, tilt. Now, our youngsters today are being told this. I could read for you the copy of a song, but why bother? You've heard a lot of them about how marvelous, how wonderful it is. The idea is that here you are walking along. You're a young man, and the chances are you're ripe for marriage. This could be anywhere today from 16 to 36, of course. And maybe clear out here in the widest part of your left-hand peripheral vision, a deliriously gorgeous young blonde with hair flying gaily in a convertible goes whizzing by. You barely see her, and all of a sudden, smash, it happened to you, and you fell in love. And you're standing here kind of petrified. And what happens? Well, it's not quite clear. It's like a fantastic disease. It's like the proverbial Cupid's arrow. It smites you. It strikes you out of the clear blue sky. You didn't expect it. It's happened to you. It's wonderful. It's marvelous. It's delirious. It's like a strange disease. The symptoms are manifold. Loss of appetite. Sometimes even loss of hair, I think, in some cases. But you get dizzy, and I think, doesn't it say your heart goes tipsy in you? And I think one song even says, clang, clang, clang goes your heart does this like the trolley bell did, yes. Now, I suppose that eventually when people do grow to love one another, that can occur. As a matter of fact, it should occur, but not quite in that way. But if this young blonde that you have seen out of the left end of your peripheral vision has been using all the soaps and the deodorants and all the hair sets and everything which make her so deliriously desirable, that this sort of happens to you, whatever it is that does happen to you when you fall in love, then our young people are told that that's precisely what love is. Now, you might ask a counselor, some youngster might say, what is love? And they might say, love is, and then follows this endless explanation of how it's delirious, it's warm, it's exciting, it's comfortable, it's also exhausting, it's dizzying, it quickens your heart, it does all these things to you. It's like a strange, wild, desirable disease that you want to get, but you don't exactly know how to contract it and how to get it. Well, Dr. James Bossard, who for many years was the elder statesman of serious students of United States marriage as to what's going wrong with it, could explain to you, in a nutshell, precisely why the divorce rate today is so appallingly high. And he said, and I quote his words, the trouble with American marriage is American courtship. Now, what is it that youngsters want in a mate today? What is it they are looking for when they seriously contemplate marriage? What leads up to marriage in most cases? I can give you a stat on that right quickly. I think most of you know immediately. But here's what the young kids are saying today. When most young girls infatuated with boys they recently had met were asked what qualities most appealed to them, they were this, that he is good-looking, or he's real cool, or he's a smooth dresser, or he's exciting, or he's athletic, or he's yakety-yak, on and on, as to what kind of a provider he would be, as to how he would be in times of stress, as to what he might do in an emergency, as to whether he is loyal, whether he is faithful, whether he is intelligent, whether he has wisdom, whether he has insight into human affairs, whether or not he is absolutely faithful and dependable, whether or not he's a hard worker. You couldn't find any such analysis in a whole bushel load of the appraisals of young people looking for the qualities that appeal to them most in trying to select a mate with whom they're going to spend the rest of their lives. I have to agree with Dr. Bassard that the thing that is wrong with American marriage is American courtship, that people today do not seem to know what love is. Now, my friends, what is love? There are many different kinds of love. There's what's called puppy love. There's the love of a parent for a child. There's the love of children toward parents. There's the love of a boy for his dog. There's the love of brother and sister. There's the love that people have toward God, if they know anything about God at all. There's the love of country, the love of home. You might call it the pride of possession. But what is the kind of love we're talking about that people fall into? Have you ever sought to analyze it? Have you ever seen an actual definition of that kind of love? The chances are you haven't, and yet it's quite important to you. Are you in love? Are you one of those who right now is in love? Is there somebody on this earth that you love? It's increasingly a rare thing, isn't it? You see hippies and beatniks walk around saying, and they have like as not a bumper sticker nowadays, I believe I've seen some around the Los Angeles area, let's make love, don't make war. But when they say make love, they don't mean anything at all about the kind of love I'm talking about. They're talking about something totally differently. It sounds almost the same, but it's spelled differently. It's lust is what it is. And lust is not love. Now, true love, I'm going to put a definition on it. It's a little involved, and yet it's quite simple. True love is a deep sense of concern, an outgoing emotion that goes away from self and toward the one being loved in deep respect, in admiration, in a desire to share, and a desire to serve, and a desire to help, and is therefore an outgoing emotion and not an incoming emotion. But the kind of love that is talked about, that is written about, that is the subject of poetry, and songwriters use it for copy and lyrics of music, that is the subject for motion pictures and the subject for the novels you read about, is all get. It's all satisfying your own personal selfish desires. It is all desiring to have somebody. You know, the honky-tonk hillbilly kind of music always seems to follow one theme. You've done gone and left me for another. And you hear this kind of thing all the time. He's always brokenhearted because she has done left him for another. And this other went gaily riding off on a horse or something. It's the type of thing that is used in the westerns in the United States of the brokenhearted cowboy who has lost his love because she's left him for another. Now, he's all broken up because he doesn't have her anymore. Many songs illustrate this idea of our people, and we sell it to one another, and we teach it to our kids, that you can't live without somebody. In other words, you've got to have that person. It's a selfish desire. Now, without going into it so thoroughly that we take every last one of the factors that causes the upset in a home, whether it's political, racial, religious, whether it's the matters of physical health or mental immaturity or emotional instability or the simple fact that a lot of people are sitting back and watching television as a kind of an adult-level babysitter and ignoring their spouses, of the lack of what people laugh about today when they talk about togetherness. You know, we like to make fun of the institution of marriage, but without going into all of it, let me give you an analogy or an example, and it's irrelevant for the moment as to whether you think this is myth or fiction or whether you think it's real. And that's the analogy of the first recorded marriage so far as man's history is concerned, the marriage of Adam and Eve. Now, as I said, for the moment, I won't argue with anybody about whether or not they believe in Adam and Eve, whether or not they believe there really were a couple of people in a Garden of Eden, and whether or not they believe that God Almighty created these people and that Eve came from a rib. That's something that you should either prove or disprove to yourself, but let's not argue about that for the moment. I just want to draw the analogy of this first marriage. Look what the Bible claims about that first marriage as to what they had going for them and all of the absence of the problems that they had, unlike most marriages today. As I say, whether you think it's hypothetical or not, here was Adam. He had no competitors whatsoever. He had nobody trying to get his job, so he didn't come home completely enervated at the end of the day. He had no union problems. He had no tax problems. He was squarely out of debt. He had no monetary problems, no money. He had no governmental problems because he knew his boss intimately, and that boss, according to the story in the Bible, was God, and that God told him that he had unlimited opportunity for advancement and absolutely no competition. Now, not only this, but Adam had no political problems because no politics, no racial problems because there was only one race and he was it. He had no in-laws around. There were no temptations from somebody else's wife across the street or around the corner, no television. So unlike a lot of the modern males of today, Adam was not sitting there in his living room seeing a dazzling parade of sweet young things in bunny costumes where his wife, maybe now at age 37 or 44, after 4 to 7 children, had lost some of the figure she had when he, quote, fell, end quote, in love with her years before. So here's Adam. He has no health problems, and Eve was quite sure of that according to the story. They were quite certain about one another's physical health. I think you get what I mean. No religious problems. In short, they had everything going for them. None of the problems that would beset a modern marriage. Now, they had no big cities. They had none of the jangling clamor of the exhausting, confusing city noises of our asphalt jungles of today. They had none of the modern entertainment. They had nothing but limitless opportunity, and they had everything going for them. Now, Eve, remember, had been selected for Adam, and she was the only one around, so Eve had no competition. There wasn't any other man, so she couldn't grow dissatisfied with Adam because that's all there was. Now, in short, here was the basis for the world's most perfect marriage. And yet again, and I'm saying hypothetically, if you want to put it that way, to avoid any argument or copy about whether or not there really were such people in a garden. But according to the story, in a very short length of time, this couple reared the first juvenile delinquent who grew up to kill his own brother. They lived to see their progeny literally cannibalizing one another. According to the story, there was such violence later by the same children of Adam and Eve while they were yet alive that the world was so absolutely filled with violence that there came a huge flood, again, according to the story. Now, what happened to that first marriage of all marriages, and it was an arranged marriage, you might as well say, to cause it to nearly break up? Now, in a short period of time, they lost their home, he lost his job, he lost his responsibility, he was in disfavor with a boss, he gets kicked out of the area where he lives, they go off together, and they are reduced from living in a veritable mansion where they had controlled climate, according to the story, where they had plenty to eat without too much work involved, where they had all of the great fringe benefits you could begin to imagine that anybody would want in a marriage. In a very short time, they went down to a hard-scrabble dirt farmer's position. They were kicked out of the environment in which they had lived all these years. Why? What happened to that very first marriage? Again, for the sake of the story. I'll tell you what happened. Marriage is all give, and human nature is all get. That's it in a nutshell. Human nature is, in its basic ingredients, selfishness, vanity, lust, and greed. Now, we might like to deny that. People talk about the basic goodness in man. Well, that's all well and good. But I assert again and can absolutely prove, because there is a book that is written about human nature, that human nature is all vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed. Vanity enters into courtship. The vanity of desiring a sweet young thing to be on your arm to exalt your own image. Jealousy. The idea that other people are going to be good and jealous when they see you enter the nightclub or the place where your friends are known to frequent, and everybody is going to be absolutely green when they see you walk in with this sweet young thing on your arm or vice versa. And people, my friends, go with one another because they want to make other people jealous about their companions. Now, we don't like to admit it, but it's true. Vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed. All right, what about lust? You look at all the songs that I've mentioned. I haven't mentioned them by name, but I mean the song copy that you hear of today, and of the novels and all of the things that we try to teach our kids about love. And after all, they're even putting dresses and suits on little bitty kids that are barely able to walk today and trying to get them to dance together and to date together before they're even in grade school. And lust is such a great part of it today. The physical, fleshly desire to have the other person. I mean to possess that other person. I mean to get that other person, not to give to them. not a sense of admiration and respect. Couples getting married, they don't know one thing about the, well, let's put it this way, food-getting properties of this mate. They don't have the remotest idea if this guy is cool or a smooth dresser or a good looker, how he's going to be as a father, the idea about his principles of child-rearing, as to whether he is a good provider, as to whether he is a faithful worker, as to whether he's going to really make it with his company, or if he's in business for himself, or he goes into the teaching field, or government, or you name it. This girl doesn't have the remotest idea about those qualities, but she likes that lock that hangs over his forehead. It really dazzles her, and this thing happened, whatever it is that they talk about. She fell in love. Now, they tell you that falling in love is as simple and as natural as breathing in and breathing out. Isn't that one of the song copies? It's just one of these things that happens. It's a delirium. It happens to you. People don't know why, but they hope that at some time or another it does. To some of our famous people, it seems to happen so often that one very famous movie actress was said on one program to virtually have a drip-dry wedding dress. I kind of enjoyed that because it's called the Hollywood marriage go-around, and like the one Hollywood bride who was reported to have said when she married again for the umpteenth time, no, the child said this. The child came in, she'd had several from different husbands, and the child said, "Daddy, would you mind signing my guest register, please?" Now, this is the picture that we have, and of course, divorce is held up as being something that is fun today. And love is a sort of a pink, fluff bubble of meaningless, ethereal ideas about an emotion. It's just a sort of a cheap infatuation or an emotion. And so people roar off and get married when they're in the grips of this thing they call love. But now, my friends, a fall is an accident. And nobody ever accidentally goes to love somebody else. And I use the definition of love that I gave you on this program, that love is a deep, full, outgoing concern, a desire to serve, a desire to share, a desire to be with, a desire to give to, an outgoing emotion toward the one that is being loved. It is not an emotion of get, it's an emotion of give. And it's no wonder that marriages are falling apart because people are convinced that marriage is a 50-50 proposition. It becomes a little unclear as to where that exact line of demarcation is to be drawn. Marriages are falling apart at a fantastic rate. I don't justify that. I'm not just saying it's a deepening sociological problem. It is. But just admit to yourself that you know a lot of people who are divorced, and admit to yourself that I don't care how chic and blasé you are, you want to be happy. And it's like J. Paul Getty is reputed to have said that he'd give all his millions for one happy marriage. Well, that pretty much sums it up. People would love to have a happy marriage. But some of the ones who are supposed to be the most successful as the veritable sex image of today in the motion picture field are the most miserable flops when it comes to marriage. A lot of people feel it's success to have great fame, being a great entertainer. Well, fine, that's great. Maybe that is success. But is it success to have a virtual trail of wasted, wrecked marriages in your past? Is that success? Or isn't it successful to have the kind of a marriage that lasts and grows in love all the time? Before my mother died, my father and mother had been married almost 50 years. Many, many such couples still exist. There are many such marriages yet where people have stuck together, but increasingly the divorce picture is mounting and growing among people who have been married for 20 years and longer, and they simply get tired and disillusioned with one another because they have never really grown up to love. Now, love is something you acquire. Love is something you grow up to. Love is something you mature into. Love is a deep admiration and a respect and an appreciation for the qualities of the person being loved and a desire to give and to share with them. It is not an empty-headed emotion of mere infatuation. And infatuation is nothing to base a marriage upon, and a lot of people are quite infatuated with one another, and they rush off in the throes of puppy love and get married to satisfy their own selfish desires and then wonder why it doesn't work out. You're living in an age of increasing accidents. And as I said before, if you fall, it's an accident. A lot of people didn't fall, they were pushed. to the pressure of friends. A lot of people married the gang, if you get what I mean. They went with a certain gang. Everybody grew to expect it of them, and so they went ahead and got married. They married the gang. People marry the church. They marry the club. They get married because they want to know what Jennifer will think when they marry Siegfried or somebody. They get married because they have to get married. As I said in the last program, broad percentages of teenagers today are getting married because they have to get married. The shotgun marriage is about 40% of the teenage brides of today from 15 to 19 age group get married when they're already pregnant. Does that prove the point that it's a matter of get and not give, that it's a matter of physical lust, of vanity, of jealousy, of greed, rather than a desire, an outgoing desire to serve and to help the one that is being loved? Well, when two people contemplate marriage, they ought to know exactly what they're doing, and they ought to give it a lot of thought. Now, the chances are your marriage is not as happy as it should be. I have some articles and booklets for you, quite simple, and a magazine that is going to help you with it, and I'm not trying to get something from you. This is a free public educational service. We'll give it to you by return mail absolutely free of charge. Listen, your marriage can be made happy. And I have an article for you on that subject that shows you there are hidden living laws that regulate happy marriages that would make your marriage happy if you would obey them. And also a booklet entitled The Plain Truth About Child Rearing that shows you how families ought to be diligently pulling together as married partners, fulfilling a vital and an important purpose in the very reason for marriage in the first place. And this booklet on child rearing also shows you the cause of juvenile delinquency and the problems in today's world. Now, there's a magazine we'll send along that's absolutely free of charge entitled The Plain Truth. And The Plain Truth magazine every single month has articles about marriage, about home, about how to rightly and correctly establish a home, articles showing you, as no other magazine can, the real meaning of today's world news, the real significance of these unbelievable conditions and what it is bringing toward the future. Now, the booklet on The Plain Truth About Child Rearing, the article on You Can Have a Happy Marriage, Your Marriage Can Be Happy. Now, also these free booklets that I've announced from time to time on Does God Exist? And the one entitled The Proof of the Bible. They're both free of charge. There's no price for them, and there is no price for The Plain Truth magazine. 52 pages, absolutely filled with pictures, some of them the most remarkable close-up color photography in our science lab that you have ever seen about some of these strange creatures. And in the current number, this article on Go to the Ant. You know that scientists for years thought Solomon was wrong? They thought that when Solomon said that ants actually gathered their food in the summer and stored it up for the winter, that this was utterly wrong. It couldn't be true. Well, it is true, and this article shows you it's true, and they've discovered there are harvesting ants, and that, too, is a great blow to the theory of evolution. So the article on the ants, every single number in The Plain Truth, articles on that subject. They're absolutely free of charge. There is no price for them. No one's going to call on you. There is no follow-up. Your name is carefully kept in our modern IBM files. It's not given to someone else. There is no bill to follow. If you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Remember, the booklets, the article I mentioned, are absolutely free. There is no charge. The Plain Truth comes along free of charge, no cost, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. And so until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.